Good afternoon, everyone. Rajiv here for immigration.com. It's a community conference call scheduled Thursday, August 13th, 2009. We are being recorded, so anybody who does not wish their voice to be recorded should hang up. Try to keep your identities confidential. This call is open call. It will be recorded, replayed by many people. So you may not want to discuss your real identities when you ask me a question. Just because we are helping you out with an answer or two does not mean our firm has agreed to represent you or that you are being represented by us. This is merely a community courtesy. Okay, we are a couple of minutes late today in starting. My apologies for that. Let me get right into it. We are going to do the conference call as usual. I will answer a few questions that have already been posted. And in between, I will put us in question and answer mode where people can ask me follow-up questions on the ones that I have answered. Then I will take up the rest of the questions. There are four or five questions that were sent to me late by Monica. I don't know if I'm going to be able to get to them because we have about 24, 25 questions already, and then another four on top of that. We may not be able to make it that far, but I'll try my best. Okay, the first question is, let's see, from F1OPT. He or she, I'm not sure, Carrie0085. Wants to know, currently working for an employer A on OPT, which expires December 2009. H-1B has been approved for fiscal year 2010 through another employer, employer B. But they want to continue working with employer A. So the question is this. Since the H-1B got approved with a change of status with an I-94 and it starts from October 1st, 2009, if I cancel my H-1B this year, will there be any problem if I apply for H-1B later? As far as I know, this is an interesting situation. I haven't looked at the regulations specifically. As far as I know, unless an H-1 is revoked for fraud or revoked by INS, you should not be subject to the quota, but I haven't looked at the regulations. I must confess, I would have to specifically research this issue. I think you're okay, but I cannot be sure until I look at HCFR 214, which is what you can also do. Look at 8 CFR 214.2 subsection H. 8 CFR, 8 Code of Federal Regulations, Volume 8, Section 214.2, subsection H. H visa, H section. You can take a look at that. You might be able to figure it out yourself. If you are not, talk to your lawyers, and if nothing else works, go ahead and send me either an email or post on my blog in a relevant place or post on immigration.com. And I'll try to answer your question, whether or not employers' revocation of the H-1 will subject to the H-2H-1 quota again. It's an interesting question. I have never really thought about it. I think you're okay. I'm actually pretty sure you're okay. And the only time you get subject to the quota is if either the consulate or the INS revokes the H-1. Okay. Can I reinstate to my F-1 status if I cancel the H-1B petition? Now, this is the toughest part. As far as I know, you cannot, but you can double-check with your international student's office. See, once your H-1 change of status has been approved, can you go back to F-1? I think there is some technical problem with Savage, as far as I understand. I think it does not allow you to go back to F-1 once the H-1 change of status has been approved. Okay? In other words, you can't go back to OPT. I mean, you can go back to F-1 and go back to school if you wanted, but you cannot go back to OPT. Okay, can I get my F-1 OPT extended to another 17 months without canceling the current H-1B petition? Again, I think this is something you need to discuss with your international student's office. Also, you can go to ICE.gov, Immigration and Customs Enforcement.gov. They have a very good frequently asked questions on this 17-month extension. And I think that your question may or may not be answered there, but your international student's office should be able to better inform you. I don't think you can. Once you've changed to H-1, I think that's over. It is not possible for you to undo, as far as I know. And please let me know what your research tells you. I can always double-check that for you. But do your research first. Can I work with employer B after some time if my H-1B petition is not canceled? Well, here's the problem. Once October 1st comes, you are on H-1. You're no longer on OPT. Yeah, if you want to go to your home country and stay there for a couple of months and then come back and work on H-1, it should be okay. I don't see any problem. But if you go to your home country for 10 months and you want to come back, USCIS can question this They can say, well, what happened to this job? You were supposed to have this job beginning October 1st. How come the employer is waiting 10 months for you? If there's a good answer to that, you should be okay. So the answer is yes, you can start working for the new employer at some time in the future, subject to the restraints that I had mentioned. Sai for GC wants to know, this is regarding somebody who's on an H-4 and her husband is abusive and doesn't give money and wants her to get money from her from her relatives, you know, from her brother and her people. If she wants to get divorced, what will be her status? Well, her status will be nothing. Once the divorce is finalized, the H-4 is over, right? Is there any way she can live here? Just like everybody else. F-1, H-1, L-1, these are some of the options. Okay. So, there is no other way, Sai, other than what regular people have. There is no special visa. And as far as I know, even if, you know, there was physical abuse involved, it would give her no relief because, as I recall, and again, I'm not an expert in this area of the law, but Violence Against Women Act, VAWA, only protects spouses of green card holders or U.S. citizens from abuse, but not of non-immigrant visa holders. So I do not believe she would have an option other than converting to her independent status like F-1 or H-1 or L-1. Next question is from R. Haran. Travel on AP but continue working on H-1. Wife is traveling to India next week, but she's currently working on H-1. Her H-1 is still 2011, but the visa is expired. But she has her AP. Now, is it okay for her to travel on AP and continue working on H-1? Mr. Haran, there is a memorandum called Cronin Memorandum, C-R-O-N-I-N. It should be available both on immigration, forum.immigration.com as well as immigration.com. So just go look in forum.immigration.com, do a search for Cronin, C-R-O-N-I-N. That memorandum says, if you are the primary applicant of the 485 and you're traveling and coming back to work for the same employer, you can continue to be on H-1 even though you entered using advanced parole. Okay? And that should be quite fine. Next question, Chuck Rocker. I-140 was approved a couple of months back. I'm on H-1 and the salary is a little less than the proffered wage which was offered on the green card. So his lawyer told him that, look, your salary does not have to match exactly the salary of the green card. Is this correct? And the answer is yes. Yes. Let's say when they filed your H-1, they promised you a salary of $60,000, which is legally allowed. Let's say, taking as an example. But your green card salary is $80,000. And let's say they started your green card in 2007. Okay? In January 2007, they started your green card. In 2009, you are filing I-140. When you file I-140, the employer has to demonstrate that beginning 2007, when they started your green card, to now, filing the I-140, they have the capacity to pay, the ability to pay, the extra $20,000. The extra $20,000. Because you're already getting paid $60,000. You're supposed to be paid $80,000. So there's a difference of $20,000. Which must show up in their tax returns. Okay? The second question is about documents, degrees, birth certificates, etc., all being laminated. I read somewhere that laminated documents are not accepted by CIS. I don't know of any such rule. At least I am not aware of it. If you see something, please run it by me. As far as I am concerned, you should be able to use copies of those documents just fine. Next question is Fly in USA. Question about H-1B holder working in a different city. She is an H-1B holder working for a company in New York City. Her husband found a job in Ohio. They are moving to Ohio. She wants to quit her, she does not want to quit her job, and her company allows her to work remotely. So what do I do? Well, this is what you should do. You should amend your H-1. Amend your H-1 to show that you are now going to work from Ohio. It's a simple matter. Well, with INS, nothing is ever simple, but let's just say, as far as theoretically is concerned, it's a simple matter of just an amendment. So it's not a big deal. There is absolutely a way to make it legal, and that's the way to do it. Amend your H-1. Next question, Kali Miro, travel when NIV pending and H-4 opening for non-profit. These are two different issues. Kali Miro is a physician working at Veterans Administration, applying for NIW. Okay, we will file I-140, 45, 80, and AP. Once the paperwork is filed and pending, can we still travel on H-1 and H-4? The answer is yes. Read the Cronin Memorandum on that. Cronin Memorandum. Okay? As long as I don't use the EAD, am I considered to be on H-1? Yes. Yes. Mere issuance, and Cronin Memorandum also says this, mere issuance of an H-1, mere issuance of an EAD does not automatically take away your H-1. It only gets taken away when you start using it. If you don't use it and you just put it on your shelf and forget about it, nobody's going to bother you about it. The last question he had was, my wife wants to open a non-profit private school with other people, but she would manage it. See, the problem is when you're on H-4, what you can and cannot do is pretty limited. And the way USCIS has interpreted unauthorized employment, you have to listen to the definition of employment. Employment is work for money, remuneration, or for any other benefit. And if you go to my blog, you can actually go under H-4 or F-2, I think under F or H, I have posted this. What is unauthorized employment? It's a full article, only a couple of paragraphs, but it gives you all the information. So you can derive the idea from there. She can, of course, manage once she gets her EAD. Even if she doesn't get paid anything, there's no question then. But before that, I think it's a little iffy. But if she's not getting paid anything, nothing at all, and she's just getting, you know, not even a benefit or an indirect benefit, I think she should be okay, but this is just a guess. How INS is going to look at it is impossible for me to say. But look at my blog and read the article. I think that should clarify all your doubts. Blue Sky Today, EAD follow-up after switching to F-1 status. Hi, Rajiv. I had written to you earlier about getting F-1. Oh, I see. With him, what had happened was he has a 485 pending, and he wants to convert to F-1 status. As a part of his 485, he had applied for EAD, but that got stuck somewhere. So they are saying the EAD has been approved, but it hasn't been produced. It's just been languishing. So he's worried that that pending EAD could somehow affect something, some other applications that he files later. And the answer is it shouldn't. I don't think it should affect. But if you don't want to use it, you can certainly tell USCIS that you don't want to use it. And you can send them a letter saying since they have not issued this so far, you might as well withdraw it because you are planning to convert to F-1. So you can send a letter withdrawing the EAD, although I don't think they will do that. But it doesn't hurt because that way you put it on the record. I don't think it should be any problem in the future, but if you feel paranoid, go ahead and send a letter in stating these two facts. You want to withdraw and you want to convert to F-1. These people have basically, you can let them know that you've been hanging on to my EAD for so long, I don't need it anymore. Okay? And that should be okay. That might be the way to do it. Bavita, H-1B extension and green card. Spouse is on H-1B and his H-1B is 6 years, is getting expired next year, September, so 2010 September. H-1B extension beyond 6 years, what is the rule behind leaving country? Oh, yes. You have to be physically outside USA for 1 year if you want to reset the clock of 6 years of H-1. So if you are in USA today and you leave for exactly 366 days, you get the entire 6 years of H-1 back. Okay? But if you stay in USA and convert to H-4 or F-1, you cannot reset the clock that way. After 1 year, you are still subject to the same H-1. You can't get any more H-1. You have to be physically outside U.S. Question number two, can an employer file for H-1B extension beyond 6 years based on employer's I-140 approval and I-140 appeal. Yes. Yes. What documents are needed as proof from previous employer in that case to file H-1B beyond 6 years? For appeal, there is a receipt issued. For I-140, there is a receipt issued. So whatever is pending, you can use the receipt to show that it's pending. What is the rule behind filing DC before completing 5 years of H-1B stay? Is that for the first labor search filing or any subsequent filing? Well, not sure what you're asking me, but what happens is there are two laws under which you can get extension of your H-1 beyond 6 years. For one law, it is important when the I-140 was, when the labor search was filed. For the other law, it is not important when the labor search was filed. The first law, which allows year-to-year extensions, allows you year-to-year extensions beyond 6 years only if on the date you have asked for the extension to begin, your labor cert would have been filed 1 year ago. Okay? So for the 1 year extensions, 1 year anniversary of labor cert is necessary. The other regulation under which, or other statute under which you can, other section of the statute under which you can get the extension is, it only looks to I-140 approval. If your I-140 is approved and your priority date is backed up, you are entitled to 3 year H-1 extension. For this law, it does not matter when your labor cert was filed. So let's say your labor cert is filed today and by some miracle it gets approved tomorrow. It does happen. Some labor certs have been approved in our own office within a day and some have been pending over a year, almost 2 years. Okay. So if the labor cert gets approved tomorrow, day after tomorrow you file I-140 premium processing, another miracle happens, in 8 days you get your I-140 approval. Now you are entitled to 3 year H-1 extension, even though your labor cert was filed 3 days ago or 15 days ago. So that's one section of law which doesn't care about when your labor cert was filed. But if you are talking about the year-to-year extension, then your your labor cert must have been filed more than a year ago. Okay? Does owning a house have any advantage? No, ma'am, it does not. I-140 from previous employer is on appeal. He's not working for that company. Can another employer still do an H-1 extension? The answer is yes. Yes. And you can hire any attorney you like. That's not a problem. What do you need? Oh, to check the status of the I-140 appeal, your employer, ex-employer, would have to hire the lawyer. I mean, you can hire the lawyer, but they would have to represent the employer because the I-140 is the employer's application. It's not your personal application or your husband's application. Next question is from Dell 234. Received my green card last year from employer A. He was also working with employer B at that time. He quit his job with employer B and joined employer A, but also kept working part-time with employer B. Now, A is the one who sponsored the green card. 3 months into the employment, employer A terminated my employment due to layoff. But you did work full-time for them for 3 months. If you did, I think you are fairly secure, especially if you can prove that there was a layoff and you did not leave. Okay. So, you know, get some proof of that, and that should help you. As to you getting some kind of a notice on an old H-1, that is irrelevant. You already have your green card. So if you already have your green card and you worked with the employer full-time for 3 months, I think you are secure if you can show that there was a layoff and you did not leave. Okay, that is what I think. Okay, that's the way it should play out, but just get some evidence of that. Next question, I don't think, rest of it for Dell 234, I don't think it's that relevant. I already answered it. Next question, leave of absence, I-485 pending. Now, this is a good set of questions. He read my blog where I said, you know, if you take a leave of absence when I-485 is pending, you have to have a good reason. Why is the employer letting you go? Okay, here you are claiming that you have a permanent job with an employer, and then you take off for 1.5 years and you go to India or France or Germany or Spain, wherever you are from, and you know, after 1.5 years you want to come back and take the green card position. INS can take an objection. They can say, wait a minute, if there is a permanent job, who is doing it? You know, so he's given a set of questions. They say whether or not the job will be available and permanent, and the answer is yes, my employer will testify it with an employment letter. Good. Why am I taking a break? It would be 10 years I've been working on H-1B, and I just wanted to take a long break to catch up with family and friends. I think that's okay. Who will work in my absence? I will complete at all my existing projects, and they'll put the other projects on hold. I think that's okay too. See, but this is a judgment call. All I can tell you is in my judgment, if this is actually the situation and you can prove it, you should not have a problem. Are you terminating relationship with your employer? And the answer is no. I worked for this employer for 7 to 10 years. I think you should be okay. What other questions can I expect? I don't know, sir. I really don't know. Just to add a note, I work as an ERP consultant in higher education, and the tool that I use does not have much skilled available people in the market. Oh, good. Good. I think you have a very good case for an extension or taking a break on an I-485. I personally would feel comfortable saying, from the facts that you've described, that we'll be able to make a good case for you. But remember, all we are doing is giving you a judgment. It is not something that I can take to the bank and say, well, it's 100% proven. It's up to USCIS or CBP or consulate whether they accept our arguments or not. Actually, in this case, USCIS. Okay. Next question is, Shapra, last year I moved to India on a company transfer to take care of my family health. I entered USA several times. Also, they are on a green card. I have a green card and I have stayed with the same company. If I quit my job, will I have any issues? Well, I don't have all your facts. You see, the biggest problem, sir, is this. I think you should apply for a re-entry permit. You should apply for a re-entry permit, because if you don't have your permanent home in the United States, they can take away your green card anytime. And the fact that you don't have a job in USA, especially if you take up a job in India or wherever, you're from India, if you take up a job in India, USCIS and kids can say that you've abandoned your green card, even if you leave for 6 months. So you are better off applying for a re-entry permit based upon the family health situation. Okay. There are other issues here also. I certainly recommend that you get yourself a lawyer for this, because this issue is complicated enough. See, the reason I say that is because, remember, the reason I-131 is granted or re-entry permit is granted is based upon a future event that can be reasonably predicted. You know, in 2 years I'll be back because my contract is expired or because my mother's treatment will be over. But if you say her treatment will go on for the next 5 years or 6 years, or we don't know till when, USCIS can claim that to be a problem as well. Okay? So keep that in mind. I think you should talk to the lawyer about your specific situation, but an I-131 should be filed. You should apply for a re-entry permit. No question in my mind about that. Ehsan 7 applied for I-130 and 485 concurrently back in November 2006. And the case is pending name check. We had a case like that a few years ago, and we ended up filing a lawsuit. And lawsuits have become a very dicey thing, especially in D.C. circuit. In other circuits, there is still a good option. It all depends. But in family-based cases, when they have been delaying so much, lawsuits usually work well. You know, try to do a congressional check first, talk to your congressman's office. Traveling on AP, I don't know if it's advisable. I really don't know what they have against you. Why are they holding you up so much? I would suggest not to travel, and I would suggest that you contact the congressman first and then start thinking of a lawsuit. I usually don't recommend them, but you may not have an option. Next question, amateur user. Okay. Immigration records. I was arrested for DUI and later released, got a pardon, so the records are sealed. So this is a difficult question to answer. As a general rule, just because a record is expunged doesn't mean that you no longer have answerability to USCIS or ICE. Okay. Again, I would very, very strongly recommend going for a personal interview or personal, for a specific consultation with a lawyer. Talk with them. Take your DUI papers with you or submit your DUI papers so that it can be assessed whether or not you were convicted under immigration laws and whether or not DUI under local laws is considered to be a misdemeanor or a felony. If it is a misdemeanor, there should not be any problem. If you have only one misdemeanor ever in your life, it's forgiven automatically. So you should have no problem. So, you know, there are a lot of ifs and buts about your situation, and it's always better to take advice from a lawyer on your specific case. Next question, ND Help. My husband and I got into an argument. I called 911. He has been arrested on a second-degree assault charge, released on bail. Trial is in September. He has applied for citizenship. Okay. Well, should we go ahead with the fingerprint? You know, ultimately this has to come up, you know. If the charges lead to a conviction, can become a problem for his citizenship. But if the charges don't lead to a conviction, for example, if you are the complaining witness, I don't know how criminal law works in your state, but you could always refuse to testify. If you feel that that was just a overreaction on your part, you could refuse to testify, and I would be surprised if the prosecuting attorney doesn't want to dismiss the charges. But that's really, your lawyer should be advising you about that. As far as citizenship is concerned, if there is a conviction, I think you're going to have a problem with the citizenship. Should you postpone the fingerprint? I don't see why. I think you can go ahead with the fingerprint. Next question. Hikoko, I-212 form. This is a strange situation. Wife has been deported because she stayed more than 6 months. See, the problem, sir, is this. Is she subject to the 3-year bar or not? It looks like she's subject to the 3-year bar. Okay. I'm not sure why you are filing the 212. Are you trying to get a waiver? Are you a U.S. citizen? You are a green card holder. Okay, so you could probably get a... again, I think you need to get yourself a lawyer. This is a very fact-bound situation. We need to know whether when she was deported, because deportation itself becomes a 5-year bar from reentry. So somebody needs to look at this. If you had a lawyer during the deportation, I would suggest you contact them and ask them this question, including the filing of the 212 form. Since they would have all the facts, it might be easier for them to just do it for you. Next question, H-1B. He is laid off, and he's an H-1B worker. And these were some interesting questions as well. Another set of very interesting questions. He read my blog. One of the options for me now is to apply for a B-1, B-2 visa. How soon or late can this be done? If there's a gap between you getting laid off and B application, it becomes a big problem. So apply for the B visa while you are still on H-1. Even if you do it online, it's no problem. You get fired today, come home and immediately file your B-1, B-2 application online. Okay? There should be no gap. If a new H-1B is applied while the decision on B-1, B-2 is pending, what I want you to do is this. When you file the new H-1, tell INS, look, I got laid off very unexpectedly. I filed B-1, B-2. I'm in authorized period of stay. I'm not in status. But since these were circumstances beyond my control, I request that I should be given change of status or change of employment within the United States. Worst case scenario, they'll ask you to go outside, get a visa stamp. Not the end of the world. Okay? And you can apply for H-1B anytime while the B-1, B-2 is pending, and the same rules apply. Okay? You are not subject to the quota, that's for sure. So even if the B-1, B-2 is pending for 2, 3, 4 months, you are not subject to the quota. Even if you have to leave USA, as long as you are not outside USA for more than a year, you are not subject to the quota. And even if you're outside for more than a year, there are some options available. I don't want to go into all those details, but that's the way the law works. I also have my I-140 approved from this employer. Can I transfer this to another job? You can retain the priority date, but you have to start the green card all over again. The only time you don't have to start green card all over again is if you are trying to do AC-21 transfer where there's a similar job and I-140 is approved and 45 has been pending 180 days. If you're not in that situation, then the only thing you get is the priority date, and you have to start the green card all over again. SMArthur at Yahoo wants to know presently on. Oh, thank you for your good wishes, sir. I'm presently on H4. I have been on H1B earlier. I have an approved I-140 NIW. Oh yeah. You see, once your I-140 was filed in 2007, and even though your 6 years of H1 are over, okay, you are entitled to you're entitled to 3 yearly extensions on H1. You have an approved NIW. The I-140 has been approved. I'm sorry, forget about the 1 year also. You have the I-140 approved. Your priority date is backed up, being EB2 India. So you can get 3 year H1 extensions for the new employer. I don't see any complications. Next question is from Bob, Basic 2002. 45 pending lost job. Was with the sponsoring employer for 5 years. PD is 2004. I-140 approved 2007. 45 applied in 2007. Got laid off. What is my current status? Read my blog. Read my blog under I-485, and you'll see a lot of discussion on this. You do not have to find a job in 30 days. If they revoke your I-140, your employer, you'll still be fine as long as you can submit a letter from another employer showing that you have a similar job available if USCIS sends you an RFE. Normally what happens is if the employer revokes the I-140, USCIS will trigger an RFE and send you a letter saying your I-140 has been revoked. Send us an AC-21 letter. Okay? So within that time, they give you normally 30 days or 6 weeks. You'll have to submit a letter from another employer showing a similar job. Okay? Not to worry, but read my blog. Most of these questions are already answered. Parental green card citizenship situation. Brother received his green card last year. Okay. Parents have retired, have moved to USA on their visitor visa for now. What would be the fastest process for him to get his citizenship? He's got his green card. Citizenship is, he's going to have to go through the 5 years like everybody else. And the time that he waited does not count into that. The time begins to run from the date he got approved for his green card, not how long he waited. Okay. Would it be better, faster for my brother to apply for my parents' permanent residency as a green card holder or wait for his... what the times are for each category are in visa bulletin. So read the visa bulletin, compare the times for every category. Okay. Only U.S. citizens can apply for parents. Permanent residents cannot apply for parents. I don't think so. I'm pretty sure, yeah. Only U.S. citizens can apply for parents. Okay. Permanent residents can apply for, I think, minor children, unmarried children, but not spouses, but not for parents. So green card holders cannot apply for parents. Yeah, I'm 100% sure. Only U.S. citizens can. Okay, so there's no choice there. Next question is repeat cell. Applied for a J-1 visa. Wife was pregnant, so decided we apply for visa for my wife and kid later when she's born and get her passport. Got the visa, daughter got her passport. Oh, now you, the university says until you are in USA, they cannot issue a DS-2 2019. Yeah, there is a rule like that somewhere. There is a rule that if you get issued a non-immigrant visa paperwork and you are not in USA, they may not be able to issue it for dependents. And I'm not sure whether the rule is a rule of custom or whether it is actually in the rule book. But typically, until you are in USA, and I would, again, you know, the authorities that issue the 2019, they are the ones that I would listen to. Of course, I don't have any rule to point to, but I've heard of this before. And I've also heard of CBP objecting to a dependent coming before, like an H-4 holder coming to USA before the H-1 holder has been to USA. I know that they create some complications with that as well. So I think they are right, but if you learn of something different, let me know, please. I'm always willing to be educated. And every day I learn something new. There is no question about that, that law is such a vast field. There are so many minor variations. If you hear of something, somewhere they can issue a 2019, let me know. But as far as I know, they are telling you the truth. Next question. Okay. Travel after green card application from SDAT. Currently in USA, plan to travel to India, sit for a visa interview for an H-1B stamp. Work authorization expires in August 2011. I see. Would you advise me to apply for a green card after coming back, or can I apply before leaving USA? Well, first of all, I'm not sure about the other facts. I am hoping what you mean is your work authorization is the F1 OPT. But H1 issuance has no bearing on the status of your green card. I posted an article on this, I think, day before yesterday, which talks about can, you know, an H1B, F1B, B1, B2, O1, everything, everybody all covered, can they apply for a green card? And the answer for an H1B is absolutely no problem. And even if you're delayed in security checks, it should not be a problem. Okay? So by law, H1 holders are allowed to apply for a green card. Julia Smith said, thanks for it really saved my time. Okay. You're welcome, Julia. I'm not sure what you're thanking me for, but you're very welcome. Next question, ABC 1980. This is the last question in the group of questions I had in front of me. I'll open the call. We have 20 more minutes. I will try to answer the four questions that Monica sent me, but I may not have enough time, guys. So I don't know what happened here. But let me try to answer at least this question and any of the follow-up questions. Okay. When, first of all, if a child is born outside, this is for ABC 1980. If a child is born outside USA to green card holders, that child is not a US citizen. He or she is not a green card holder. They don't get automatically green card. There is some rule that if the child is born and in their first visit back to USA, they can bring the child. If the child is under 2 years of age, USCIS doesn't create any problems letting them in, and they give them a green card right away, something like that. But the child does not get a green card automatically. Okay? Child is born in USA, they get US citizenship. Yeah, that is correct. But is there any way she can possess Indian citizenship and not US citizenship? Yes, you can give up US citizenship anytime you want. Although, even if you are U.S. born, you can renounce your U.S. citizenship. There's a procedure for it. You have to go to the consulate, or if you're in U.S., I'm sure there's a bunch of forms you have to file. But you can renounce your U.S. citizenship if you want. What happens if a child is born in India when parents are on EAD status? Doesn't matter. You get nothing. What happens if a child is born in India before parents get green card? Doesn't matter. Green card holders, children, do not get any status if they are born outside USA. Okay, guys, I'm going to open the call for questions first. I rushed through the questions as quickly as I could. I wanted to make sure I get everybody. I still have four questions left. Don't know if I'm going to be able to get to them. They were sent to me a little bit later by Monica. And I am leaving for a few days, about 5 days next week. So I may not be able to get to any of these questions until the next conference call. And I'll ask Monica to post them for the next conference call as the first four questions. Okay? Let's get to the follow-ups anybody has. Give me a second. I will not be answering any new questions at this time, only follow-ups on the questions that I've already answered. So please don't ask me any new questions. Just a second. press star 6 to talk with me, please. Star 6.
Hi, Rajiv.
Hello.
Hi, Rajiv. This is regarding the question I have posted. Leave of absence 485 pending.
I got it. Yes, sir.
Okay. Thanks for answering that. I have a question. Next year, my H1 is expiring, and that would be the 10th year on my H1 status.
Okay.
And my EB3 priority date is April 2002.
Okay.
So if I apply my H1B extension, is it going to be like for 1 year or like 3 years?
3 years.
3 years. 3 years. Okay. They won't say that, you know, because your priority is pretty close, so you won't...
No, close is not good enough. It's an all or nothing. It's a zero-sum proposition. Either your priority date is current or it is not current. If it is not current, you're entitled to 3 years.
Okay, great. Okay, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Good luck. All right, folks. A star 6 to mute yourself and star 6 to unmute yourself. Talk to star 6. And after you're done talking, mute yourself again, please. Star 6. What? No questions?
Yeah, Rajiv, I have a question. I did not post it, though.
Okay, give me 1 second. Anybody has any follow-up on what we have discussed so far?
Yeah, Rajiv, this is Sanjeev. Yeah, my question is number 18.
Just tell me what question. What was it about?
So this was regarding the 3-year extension on H-1B from a university.
I remember.
And you did mention that I could get a 3-year extension.
Sanjeevji, your I-140 is already approved.
Right.
Okay. Your NIW is approved. Your priority date is backed up. You're clearly entitled to 3-year H-1 extension.
Okay. Now, the question is, my spouse is in H-1, and that's how I have a H-4 status. But if my spouse is laid off, how does it work that then?
Well, worst case scenario, you'll have to go outside USA to get H-1 visa extension. You're still entitled to your 3 years.
Okay. Now, if I have to go back to India, these days they're putting a lot of people on the Mantis visa, and I don't know how that works out.
Are you working with any of the technologies in the technology alert list?
Well, no and yes. You know, I mean, the technology list is so wide, and, you know, eventually everyone is in technology
list.
Well,
if I were you, I would carry a letter from the university explaining how you are not subject doing anything. You're not making any weapons of mass destruction.
Okay,
That'll help ease the passage. And also carry a letter from the university saying that your presence back is required and why it is required.
Sure. That helps a lot.
Yep.
Thank you, Rajiv.
You're welcome. Folks, anybody who has questions on a follow-up? Very good. We are open to new questions. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, thank you, sir. Hi, Rajiv. My name is Vivek. I hope you're doing well.
I'm well. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you so much for this service. We really appreciate it. Thank you. And recently, I've been working for this company A, for the last 2 years. And now, because of the economic conditions, I wanted to switch to my old company.
Okay.
So what I did was I took the interviews and everything, and they gave me offer letter, and I sent my H-1B transfer documents, everything. But now, because I had an issue with the green card processing, they said that they stopped the green card processing. So because of that, I'm going to stick with my current company. So my question is, and I called my company P's new employers, which is my previous company's Human Resources, and they are saying that they are not sure if that company's immigration team already filed for my H-1B transfer. So in this case, what happens? What would happen if they already send my H-1B transfer premium?
Let me understand the situation. Leave aside the green card. The question here is this. What is bothering you is this. I'm working for one employer. Second employer may have filed my H-1 transfer. Does that negate my current H-1? Is that what you're concerned about?
Yes, sir.
And the answer is not at all.
Not at all, okay.
Not at all. If you are working for IBM, Sun Microsystems files your H-1, and Microsoft files your H-1, and Department of Treasury files your H-1, your current H-1 is IBM, remains undisturbed. It is your choice, whoever you want to join.
Even though it is approved. Okay. And would it be a risk to my current H-1, I mean, meaning would my company A, my current company would be informed by INS that I already, during my green card processing or at any stage, that I have already tried to transfer to another company?
USCIS does not inform employers. I cannot think of any circumstance under which they would inform the employer.
Okay. So it would not, so you are confirming that it's not a risk to my current H-1B with my current company?
I don't think it's a risk at all.
Okay, great, sir. And one last question is, my employer is filing my labor cert in September 2009, before September 2009, which is 1 year. My six years will be completed September 2010, and he's going to apply before September 2009. I want to know when I should be eligible for H-1B extension and when I should apply for H-1B extension.
Okay, the rule is a little complicated, but pay attention, and it's not that complicated. It's not rocket science. It's basically just law. The way it works is, you can apply, there are two rules you have to keep in mind. You can apply for an H-1 6 months ahead of the date you want to start. So if you want to start on October 1st, you can apply your H-1 on April 1st, 6 months ahead of October 1st. Okay? Anytime you want to start an H-1, you can apply 6 months ahead of the start date. Number one rule. Number two rule, the date you start work or you start your extension must be the date the 1 year anniversary of the labor cert is over. So let's take a simple example. April 1st of this year, you file your labor certification.
Okay.
Okay. And let's say October 10th of the next year.
Okay.
October 10th of, well, no, let's rephrase that. October 1st of the next year will be 6 months. Okay?
Okay.
And April 1st of the next year will be 1 year, right?
Yes, that's correct.
So, if you file your labor certification on April 1st.
2009.
You can apply for your H-1 extension in October 2009. Because that is the date on which you want to start your job or you want to start the extension. And that is date you also are qualified because your 1 year anniversary is reached. So again, I don't want to confuse this. I know I've only succeeded in confusing you more. The bottom line is, you can apply for an H-1 extension 6 months ahead of time, but on the date you ask for, your labor cert must have reached the 1 year anniversary.
So actually, just to confirm my understanding, you are saying that because let's say my employer files on September 1, 2009,
yes,
and my H-1
September 1 is August. August of next, no, not August, I'm sorry, is March of next year. Okay? 6 months. So in March of next year, they can apply for your H-1 beginning September of that year.
Oh, I see what you mean. Okay, so in March 2010,
You can apply that early, but you won't get approval starting from March. Approval will start from September.
So even though I received the approval in April 2010, but the starting date will be from September 2010.
Correct.
Oh, okay. Okay. So, but I will be, my eligibility will be, because, you know, sometimes my employers, they really do not care about when they are supposed to apply, because they could even try to push it and try to apply it in August 2010 instead of March 2010.
No, they shouldn't do that. They should apply as far ahead, as early as possible.
What happens if they apply, like, let's say, August 2010 instead of March 2010?
Actually, that is quite all right. If they apply in August and you are still in valid H-1 status, you get an automatic extension of 240 days to continue working after September also.
Because my labor cert was filed 1 year before my 6 years.
No, this is a third rule. There's a third rule that you also have to remember. The third rule is this. If somebody's H-1 extension or transfer is timely filed and they are entitled to that extension, they can continue working for 240 days, 8 months, automatic extension to work.
Okay, only 8 months. So that means after September 2010, instead of getting 1 year extension,
but
I would
after,
get only...
But 8 months, and by that time your H-1 will be approved anyway, right?
Oh, okay. Then I would be able to continue for 4 more months.
Exactly. So it's not something to lose sleep over. Even if they delay it, you shouldn't get upset about it. But, you know, try to apply as early as possible. So start mourning and complaining beginning March, or even February, start mourning and complaining, oh, you have to file my application.
Okay. Yeah. So, yeah, basically because somebody was mentioning that because my H-1B is going to 6 years will be completed September 2010, and they are filing in September 2009, 1 year, just 1 year before. A couple of my colleagues, they are saying that you should be, when you apply for your labor cert, immediately after a month or so, you should apply it otherwise, because it's like 1 year before, before you enter the 6 years, you need to apply for your H-1B extension as well, they said.
The laws are very murky in this area, okay? All I can tell you is in your situation, I don't see any reason you need to worry. As long as they get the labor cert filed, you should be okay.
Labor certified before 1 year, I can apply for my extension.
No
6 months before my 6 years complete.
Yep, you got it.
Okay, thank you so much, sir. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Good luck, sir.
Hey, Rajiv, this is a new question. Can I ask it?
Yes, please go ahead.
All right, sir. Thank you very much. I am on an EAD with my 140 approved more than 6 months back. And my
is your EAD based on your 485?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so I-140 approved. EAD in hand, 485 filed more than 180 days ago.
Yes.
Okay.
The situation, is there a way I could own a part or full of the company which sponsored my green card?
How big is the company?
It's about 25 people and 3 million in revenue.
Were you involved in the ownership before you filed the green card?
Theoretically, yes. Well, officially, no, because we are three partners which formed the company. When forming, I was a hedge fund.
See,
so
I'm very uncomfortable with that situation. I'll tell you why I'm so uncomfortable.
Okay.
Because when you have a silent understanding amongst partners that I'm actually an owner but you're filing as an employee, then it can be said you have committed fraud upon the Department of Labor.
Okay.
Okay, so I am very, very hesitant to advise you that it's okay to go on with this kind of arrangement.
Understand.
Okay, I see it as a really big problem.
Okay, now is there, the same thing should be understood in a different way, so like an employer, like whatever I am me.
Look, if you had come to me when you filed this labor certification, several years ago, I would have given you two choices. I would have said, look, either we tell the Department of Labor that you have an ownership interest in the company, even though nothing has been formalized.
Okay.
And we have to go through a much more difficult process to get the green card. Or you give up your interest in this company, move over, go to another employer, and get a true employment.
Understood.
Okay. And I'm giving you the same choices now. I think If you came to me and you wanted to clean up your record, I would say give up this green card, withdraw this I-140, revoke it, don't use the priority date, just go to another employer, get a real employment, start all over again. I know you would hate me for that advice, but my job is to make it legal, not to make it pretty.
No, absolutely, and thank you very much for the true advice. The second question is different. Now that I am on this situation, is it a possibility that I could, being on a like EAD, open or start a new company on me or my spouse's name, who is also on EAD, on a dependent on me?
You can.
To open a new company and then transfer or file an EC-21 of my green card to both companies?
You can do all those things, but that does not take away the original implicit misrepresentation. Okay?
Right, no. My first question is out of the question now. That's no longer a possibility.
Okay.
I understood with your advice.
Okay, but my point is, when we have obtained a labor certification with an inherently faulty preposition, that labor certification is poisoned.
Correct.
Based upon that labor certification, you filed a green card. Okay? You filed the I-140, you filed the 485. It's sort of like a fruit of a poisonous tree. No matter what you do, the tree is poisonous, whether you file an AC-21. Ultimately, if the government wants to make an issue of it and they start investigating at some point of time, they can come back and say, you know what, your labor cert was filed. I don't think they can hold you for fraud. I don't think that's a possibility because you really did not own any part of the company. You don't have any formal ownership in the company. There's no writing that says so. But at the same time, they can consider that to be a ground for invalidating the labor certification. Under the new laws, 908 can be invalidated forever. I mean, there is no limit on when they can invalidate. Did you have a ETA 750 or a 908?
I don't have the information.
Did you do the green card before 2007, labor cert?
In 2007 on the firm basis.
Firm base, yeah. Firm can be invalidated any time, even 10 years into your life.
Understood. So, with your advice, I mean, that is no longer a possibility which I'll not go for. So, that is a completely thrown out case. On a different situation, let's say, so I'm working for this company, now that I'm in this company, can I open a new company
generally
on
speaking,
me or my wife's name and then file AC21?
Generally speaking, an AC21, well, first of all, an EAD permits your spouse and you to own a company, start a company, do whatever you want.
Right.
And also, under the Yes Memorandum of May 2005, you are allowed to self-sponsor through your own company for an AC21.
Okay. Forgetting, well, thank you for the information. So, putting aside that I'm no longer going for the first
problem. Yeah, that's exactly what it is. I put aside those problems, and I said, generally speaking, that's how the law works.
Okay. So, the answer is yes.
Yes.
That I can file an EC21 and then continue my further green card sponsoring with my new company setup.
The answer is yes.
Okay. And then, well, thank you for the other real advisor. I mean, I am not following your advice. I'll stop the thought of the first option.
Right.
Thank you very much.
Good luck to you.
Hi, Rajiv. Hello.
Hello.
Oh, a lot of people, huh? We only have a couple of minutes. Well, I'll try to do the best I can for all of you. Go ahead.
Hi, Rajiv. I have a situation where I've been working. Hello?
Yeah, I can hear you. Just one person.
Sorry.
Please, yeah?
Yeah, I have a situation where I've been working for a company for almost 7 years now. And my labor was filed in 2002, and it was eventually approved by one of the backlog elimination centers in 2007 summer. And I applied for 140 and 485 in August 2007. But what happened was between when the labor was filed and it was approved, the company was acquired by a bigger organization. And
did your job remain the same location, same salary, same job description?
Meaning between the two companies?
Yes.
In fact, both are consulting companies, so it was
right.
The location.
Did the company change its headquarters? Did they close the old company?
Yeah, exactly. That is what happened, yes. The company did that.
Okay.
So the company that...
Did you post a message on immigration.com?
No, not yet.
Oh, because believe it or not, day before yesterday, two different people posted a question just like yours.
Okay.
On immigration.com. Go to immigration.com and check out the comments from people.
Okay.
Okay, under I-140, two people posted the same question, exactly like yours.
Okay.
Well, a little bit different. One question was, my employer moved more than 50 miles away.
Right.
While the I-140 was pending. Now what do I do? The other one said, I think my company was acquired or something like that.
Okay.
We actually had a case like this, very weird case, and I have actually given a link to that case.
In fact, I read that, and that is the reason I'm calling
right.
again.
We were able to save that case, even though it was a situation very similar to yours. Now, I can't guarantee that we'll be able to do it for you. Give me a couple of more facts. Your 45 was filed with the I-140, or your I-140, 45 are both pending, right?
And in fact, 140 got denied 10 days ago because of this, because of the reason that the address on the petitioner of 140 is around 165 miles from
okay.
the address
all
on
right,
the
attorney. No problem. But yeah. when the I-140 and 45 were first filed,
yes,
45 was also filed, right?
Yes, concurrently, yes.
Concurrently. So it was pending more than 180 days when the I-140 was denied?
485, yes.
Okay. I think we might be able to make a very good argument for you. What I want you to do is, hang on one second. I want you to call our office. Call
okay.
Leslie. She may not be able to give you an appointment for tomorrow. She'll probably tell you she can't give you an appointment for tomorrow because I'm leaving town.
Okay.
But tell her, Rajiv said, I was on the conference with Rajiv. He said my case is very urgent because I have
okay.
a 6-day deadline.
Okay.
we might be able to at least make a good argument for you. The problem is once a case goes in appeal, our chances are very dim.
Okay.
But we should file a motion to reopen with the arguments that I'm thinking of, which have worked in at least one other case.
Right.
Okay. Now, I don't know if they'll work in your case, but we can try.
Right. Right.
And we might be able to convince INS to, you know, overlook that problem.
Okay.
Okay.
Did you say Wesley, Mr.
Ranjit? Leslie Hager.
Leslie, okay, sorry.
She's in our Stanton office.
Okay.
Go to immigration.com, look at the top right, it tells you the Stanton office's phone number, call her up now. She's actually IMing me as we are talking. She was IMing me, oh, I need to talk to you about Friday's schedule, it's looking very busy. So just tell her that Rajiv said, my case is very, very urgent, I need to talk to her.
Okay.
Leave her your phone number. I'll at least organize somebody to talk with you and get the details on it.
Okay.
Huh?
All right. Hi, Rajiv.
Yes, sir.
One by one. Just make up a name. Call yourself Tom, Terry, whatever, so I can call somebody.
Right. This is Sumit.
Sumit. Bolo.
Yeah, Anji. Yeah, I am actually calling. The question I have is that my I-140 has been approved. My 485 is pending for more than 6 months.
Achha.
My H1, H4 are, me and my wife, H1, H4 are valid till 2011, and we also have our EADs.
Okay.
However, I'm trying to get into the business, and the company is obviously going to change.
Wait. So the I-140 is approved, 485 is pending more than 180 days.
Yes, that's correct.
All right.
And the priority date is December of 2006.
All right.
And I'm trying to get into the business with one of the friends. And what is the main thing that I need to take care of? Because I know one thing.
Let me tell you what concerns me.
Yeah.
The gentleman who was talking with me before you about starting his own company.
Right.
It's a good point for him to note as well. I hope he's still on the phone. You see, Yates Memorandum of May 2005 says that we will permit AC-21 for self-owned companies or self-owned businesses, okay? But here is my problem. This provision was never quite fleshed out, okay? So we have absolutely no information beyond what I've just said. It is allowed, but the question is, how should this company be? Does it have to be a corporation, an LLC? None of this is clear. But at the very least, this is from common sense, just from legal common sense, this is what concerns me. AC-21 is only given for similar jobs. Okay? So let's say you were working as a software engineer in the green card job.
Right.
Now you're working as a CEO. These are different jobs. These are not the same jobs.
Right.
Okay? So you have to make sure, even if you own stock in the company,
right,
you do the same job as you were doing earlier.
Okay.
Remember one thing. Company ownership and employment are two different things.
Right.
I could be an owner of the company, 100% stockholder, and still be just an employee. Somebody else is the manager, the chief executive officer, and the president of the company.
Okay.
As long as your job descriptions are same or similar, you should be safe even with your own company.
Okay.
So the thing to watch out for is to not change the nature of your job.
Okay.
If you start becoming the head honcho and no more do any development, I think you're in trouble.
Right. Okay, now does the salary also have to be the same or if it's
same or similar in that range? Because, again, that same memorandum, unfortunately, that's the only law we have. Yet memorandum also said that if there is too much salary differential, that's the ground to look into it whether these are same or similar jobs. Some of the ways in which I think salaries can be justified are, for example, if you are moving from Little Rock, Arkansas to Manhattan, New York, salaries are going to be different.
Right, the wage basically, yeah.
Okay. Not only that, if your labor cert was filed in 2002 and you are looking at 2009, of course the salaries are going to be different.
Right.
So these are some of the factors I look at. Unfortunately, we have been cut off at the knees by lack of regulations. All we've got is memoranda floating around. And thank God, thanks to Bill Yates, he at least wrote that detailed memorandum before he left USCIS. Otherwise, we would all have been blind men trying to lead each other.
Right. Now, based on what you just said, to take care of the similar type of position and similar salary, apart from that, all I have to do is file AC-21?
AC-21 letter, yeah. And read my blog on the details. Get yourself a lawyer. Don't fool around with it yourself.
Right, I know, absolutely.
It's a one-shot deal because you can't, you know, AC21 is a one-shot deal. If you don't get it right, they can deny the case. Now you're in trouble.
Right, right, right. Now, does the H1 also have to be transferred to another company?
It does not happen.
It does not happen.
There's no law. I prefer to keep it active and read my blog on that as well.
Right.
I wrote an article why I like to keep the H1 active, and I give you my reasons there.
Right.
But it doesn't have to.
Right. No, that is why I kept my H1 and H4 both active, even if I have EAD and everything.
Yeah.
So that's what I was asking, if I switch over to another company and become a part of the
business.
You
see, because you're going to be working in such a small company, I probably don't want you to do an H1. Because
H1
would become such a problem then. So go on
EAD,
and that should take care.
That should take care. Okay. Thank you so much. Thank you
very
much.
Good luck to you, sir.
Hello, Rajiv.
Yes, sir.
Hi. My name is Abdul.
Yes, Abdul.
Yeah, the thing is that I graduated in August of 2008, and my...
I have to ask you a question first, Abdul. You don't have Ali, you don't have Ali or Muhammad in your name?
Yeah, it's Abdul Muhammad.
The reason is, everybody that I speak with from the Muslim world has either Ali or Muhammad or Hassan in their name.
It's Abdul Muhammad.
Okay, and then whenever I talk with them, invariably the question is, Rajiv, I have a problem with my name check. Of course you have a problem with your name check, because everybody in the Muslim world is named with one of these three names.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I've been through that a long time back, actually.
Good.
So the thing is that my OPT is expiring on September 8th of 2009, and I haven't got a job yet, and I didn't join any of the consultancies.
How many days do they give you? What is it, 60 days or 90 days that they give you that you can be without a job? Something like that, right?
They say it's 90 days, but I don't know. That's why I wanted to talk to you about it.
I don't remember all the law off the top of my head. Whatever that time is, if you are out of a job for more time than that, then you are considered to be out of status.
Okay. But isn't that once you get a job, or... doesn't matter if you don't get a job at all. I mean, the first job, after you lose the first job, the next 3 months. Isn't that how it works?
I think it is a cumulative time. But again, sir, you're asking me questions for which I haven't studied. So I really don't know. I'll have to look at the regulations and look at the... I'll direct you to the same site. Go to the custom enforcement website, ICE.gov, and they have a good page of good frequently asked questions page on all these OPT issues.
Okay, could you please repeat it once again?
Yeah, it's easy. ICE, ICE as in snow, ICE.
Okay,
ICE. All right. ICE.gov, G-O-V.
Okay.
And if you all can't right, find it, just send me an email through the contact us form on immigration.com. I'll send you
okay.
The...
Okay. Okay, all right. Thanks a lot. Thanks
You're
a lot.
Welcome. You're welcome. Good luck, sir.
Hi, Rajiv. It's Satish.
Yeah, Satish.
Yeah, I have a question. I'm asking about my wife. Actually, my wife came to U.S. on H-4 visa in May 2006,
okay.
And I am in H-1, and changed the employer in June 2007, and at that time, actually, my company applied H-4 for her, and that is valid till June 2010, and actually, she got H-1B in 2007, October, and she worked till April 2009,
okay?
And she went to the Mexico and got H-1 stamping also. After that, she went to India in April 2009, and she returned in May 2009. So 1 month she went for vacation. So after that, since she was not getting any projects, so she wanted to change the status.
Hello, hello. Did she come back on H-1 or H-4 when she came from India?
Yeah, she came on H-1.
Okay. When did she enter USA on H-1?
Actually, she from years she went to Mexico and got H-1 stamping.
No, then when she went to India, when did she come back?
In May 2009.
Okay. So she has been out of status from before, but even after May 2009, she's been out of status. If you want to convert her back to H-4, your only option, as I see it, is to go back to India, get an H-4 visa stamp, and come back.
Okay, can she go to Canada and get the H-4 stamping?
Technically, no, because if she has been out of status, unless there were some extraordinary circumstances, consulates want her to go back to their home country.
Okay, but do they need any pay stubs?
Well, the truth is she didn't have a job, so where's the pay stub going to come back from? Just tell
yeah.
them, If you are asked that question, just say, I didn't have a job. That's not a ground for denial of H-4.
Okay. And the one more question, like, you know, actually, I am completing 6 years in next June. So will that create any problem for her?
What you can do is you can send her to India June next year. You have to come back on H-4 for whatever time is remaining on your H-1. And then when she comes back, you can apply for an H-1 and H-4 extension together.
Okay. Because she's planning to India again in October. So that should not be a problem, right? When she go to India in October, she can go for stamping, right? Stamping?
No problem. She can go for stamping again.
Okay.
But don't keep her here because she's deportable. If she gets deported, she can't come back for 5 years.
But actually, she's planning in October, so...
No, don't let her stay here illegally. I wouldn't recommend it. The choice is yours.
Okay. So, but before that, can I apply for I-159 for the change of status?
No, sir. She's out of status. It's very unlikely they'll give her a change of status within the U.S.
Okay. Thank you, Rajiv.
You're welcome.
Rajiv. Rajiv, this is Pete. I'm asking a question on behalf of my friend. He was in adjustment of status and he passed away. And his wife is also in the same U.S. status. Is there any benefit that she can apply for completing this green card process? Or
I don't know of any way to do it for employment-based applicants.
Because there was some kind of a bill was there sometimes back, the death benefits to be passed on to the beneficiaries. I don't know whether this...
I think it's only for family-based applicants.
Oh, it's not employment-based.
Not employment-based.
Oh, I see. Also, I have another small question. This one of my friends, he applied for EB3 category, and he's waiting for last 4 or 5 years, and now he wants to apply for under EB2. If EB2 is done, and when the porting happens, again the...
At the I-140 stage. If the EB3 I-140 is approved, when he files EB2 I-140, he can attach a copy of the EB3 approval and ask for a port.
I see. So, although H-1B is not valid, we don't have to withdraw the first 485 has been filed.
No, not at all.
The second 485 can be applied before withdrawing.
Second 485 does not have to be applied. You can actually get reports of the priority date and then take that new I-140 with the old priority date and put it on top of the pending 485. So you can file just the I-140, get it approved, and then knock off the old I-140 and interfile the new I-140 on top.
Oh, I see.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Good luck, sir.
Thank you.
Guys, make it really quick. I have to run. Go ahead, please. Sir, go ahead.
Okay. Actually, it's the same question that the other gentleman was asking. If during that second EB2 I-140 approval, second one doesn't happen. EB2 140 is not approved for some reason. It gets rejected. What happens to the EB3 I-140, which was approved earlier?
I don't know your case, but generally speaking, denial of the second I-140 has no bearing and should not affect the existing I-140.
Okay. So the fallback is still there. I mean, if for some reason that 140 doesn't get approved EB2, I can still use the old EB2. Old I-140 approval.
That is correct. The only time my answer would change is this situation. You are working for the same employer.
Right.
EB3 case was for software engineer. The EB2 case was for project manager. And you are already working as a project manager. You took a promotion.
Okay.
That's become a problem because then INS could say, are you taking a demotion? Are you going back to your EB3 job? What's going on? If they get to that, when they normally do.
All right. That's definitely a case.
Yeah.
Okay, and just actually I wanted to ask about H-1 extensions. How difficult will it become now, because they say ultimate
client letter.
The way I see it, and read my blog on this, the way I see it, we don't see any problem. All that is happening now is INS has become more particular about the documentation.
Right.
I don't know what is this, all this panic about, oh, H1s are not coming through. H1s are coming through. Of course they are coming through. The only thing is they are doing everything by the book, as they should be.
So that ultimate client letter need was even earlier it was there?
Of course it was there. They just never enforced it. I mean, this is something that, let me rephrase that. The regulations were always there. They just have started interpreting them a little bit more differently.
Okay.
Right?
But still, I mean, because no one gives for more than three months. 3 months is the maximum when any employer, you know, the ultimate client would give any letter, you know. Although he's very skeptical about giving any letters, actually.
You should go to my blog and read. I have an article that is coming up in October in one of the American Bio Association publications. I've posted a copy of that article already.
All right, sir.
Blog is also on immigration.com.
Okay, sir. One last thing, sir. This September 2009 visa bulletin is already out, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And still the EB3 are unavailable?
I haven't seen the visa bulletin, but, you know, again.
Yeah, that is what I'm saying. But usually when they put unavailable, September is it when it changes, right? Or it's not necessary?
It changes in October.
Okay. All right, sir. Thank you so much.
Andrew Rogers, this is Karthik.
Karthik, go ahead.
Actually, I posted a question. The first question, which is carried 0085 regarding the OPD and H1.
Okay. Right.
And
did you hear my answers?
No, actually, I forgot to because I was on job and I couldn't.
Okay, no, you have to listen to because I'm not going to go back and repeat them.
And yeah, I have only one question. So let's say if I file H1 next year, right, will I come into quota, master's quota?
I have already given the answer, and that's what I wanted to listen to my answer. I think it does not.
So then it will be on the bachelor's quota then?
I think it's you are fine. I don't think you're subject to the quota again, but I can't confirm it.
Okay. So let's say if I apply next time, then it will be on the 65,000, not on the 20,000, right?
In my, no, you are not subject to the quota at all in my opinion.
Oh, so I couldn't understand that.
Sir, if you already have an H1
yep.
and you apply for an H1 transfer, are you subject to the quota?
Oh, okay, I got it. So now what will happen if I continue on OPT? Will my H1 be valid?
You're asking me the same questions over again. I'm not going to repeat them.
Okay, all right, thanks a lot.
Ajiv?
Yep.
Hi, this is Sandeep. Rajiv, my wife, she's on H1 and I'm on H4. And last time I was traveling, when I came back to U.S., immigration, they suspected that I'm working in U.S., that I wasn't though. So they said, okay, next time you enter U.S., you should have a work visa, any kind of work visa. So I have an H-4, a valid H-4 though. So can I travel?
Yes, you can travel. I don't see, if you are not working, why should that bother you? I'm not concerned about that.
Okay. And if I want to work over here, I'm a Canadian citizen as well. So if I want to work over here, what's the easiest way to get a work visa?
TN, if you are either a TN or an L1, of course H1 is also there. So look at L1, H1.
I was trying to apply for a TN. I have a graduate degree. Employer is willing to, give me employment as well.
Did you look at the schedule? What is it, Schedule B or Schedule 2 to NAFTA? Are you under any of the... What are...
I'm in geography.
I think it's covered, as far as I know.
It is, yeah. And another thing is, like, do they, you know, want the company standing, company taxes and everything also, or no?
No, but they can ask for anything they want.
Excuse me?
Normally they don't, but they can if they want.
Okay. So if I go to the border, should I carry their,
Normally, when we send people to the border, we just send them with a couple of things. We send them with a letter from the company describing in detail about the company as well as the job.
Right.
And we send them with the proof of their own qualification. That's all we send them.
Right. So because the company is not too old, it's about a year old.
Well, as long as it's a valid, genuine, legal company, I don't see why that should be.
It is. Now, the other thing is, if I want to, be a part of a company over here in U.S., can I be a part of a company and apply for some kind of status or a visa or something?
you know, unless you are making an investment and you want to apply for a treaty trade or treaty investor visa.
The E2 visa, yeah.
Yeah, that's the only option you've got. But otherwise, unless you're investing $1 million or $500,000 and creating 10 American jobs, you're not allowed, just because you are a stockholder in a company, to be getting any kind of status.
Right. And the other thing is, like, I'm a part of a company in India as well. It's an Indian company in India. And I think I can also apply for L1, but
that's
can
what
I apply?
Look into TN, L1, E2, H1. These are the four choices.
Right. But being in the U.S., can I apply for L1 being a part of a company in India?
When did you enter U.S.?
Last time I entered about 2 months ago.
No, I'm sorry. Let me rephrase that. How long have you been in the U.S. on H4?
On H4 about 4 years now.
4 years?
Yeah.
I think it's iffy because one of the things is that you must have worked 1 year out of the last three outside USA for the company.
Okay. Does it have to be continuous 1 year or accumulated 1 year?
As long as it is not interrupted by a large period of time. If you come every month for a couple of days, it's okay. But if you are here for 6 months, 7 months, then you have to start the 1 year all over again.
Okay. So the best bet for me is to go for TN then.
TN appears to be a good bet. But again, you know, have somebody look at you, the details of your situation.
Yes, certainly, certainly.
All right.
And, my wife, she's on H1, so...
I really have to go on to other people. I'm sorry, I really don't have a lot of time for everybody. Hang on 1 second. Just hold on 1 second. Does anybody else have any questions?
Hi, Raju.
Yeah, go ahead, sir.
Yeah, actually, I am on H1 and I am completing 6 years in June 2010.
Okay, hang on.
Okay.
Folks, this is the last question I can answer. I've got to run. I'm already half hour late. But go ahead, sir.
Actually, I'm going to complete 6 years in next June 2010. Okay, but actually, in the 2005, I went for the 6 months to India. So, will that connect?
The law is, if you have been outside USA for more than 6 months in any one consecutive 12 months, you might be able to get your year back.
Okay.
If you are outside for less than 6 months, you get all the days that you were out. So if you were out for 6 months, you get the 6 months back. If you were out for 6 months one day, you get 1 year back.
Okay, okay. But even for the filing green card, suppose if I file the green card in August, suppose in August this month, so that means am I eligible for the 1 year extension?
When does you expiring? No, yeah, shouldn't be a problem because you see your status is expiring in June. Okay, so you apply for labor cert now. About 3-4 months or 2 months before June, you can apply for 1 year and 5 months extension. Or 6 months extension, because you were outside USA for 6 months.
Okay, I'm outside for yes.
Yeah, so you get 1 year, 6 months extension in June.
Okay, even though my permit is not approved?
Even if it is not approved, there's no requirement of approval.
Okay, yeah. All right, thank you, Roger. Thank you very
and
much.
And you can also combine the 1 year as well as the 6 months of recapture in one application. So you can get 1 year and 6 months.
Okay. Oh, all right.
All right, folks,
thank you,
I'm sorry, guys. I would love to sit and chat with you guys, but I've got to run. Thank you all. Bye-bye.
Sure. Thank you
very much, sir.